You are Locked On NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On NFL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for SB Nation and Packer Report. I cover the NFL around the internet. You can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. Follow us on Twitter as a podcast at Locked On NFL Pods. Today's show is brought to you by Pepsi. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Basically, it's made for us. Pepsi, made for football watching. Week one of the NFL season in 2020 in the books, between the weird canned audio of fans, the low din of whatever weird pre-recorded audio the NFL gave every team, which also seemed to be inconsistently applied around the league. We had a tremendously entertaining week one. Weird outcomes, wacky games, some explosive teams. We're going to talk to a number of Locked On Podcast Network hosts about the biggest, most important outcomes, the weirdest outcomes, and some of the terrific storylines that came out of week one. I mean, we had a team win a game where a coach who's battling cancer got an IV at halftime. That is just, this is bigger than football at times. And so, you know, Chris Russell from Locked On Redskins is going to be on the show. Ross Jackson from Locked On Saints to talk about Saints. Bucks is going to be on the show. This is how we're going to handle Mondays. It's the biggest stories and local experts. Mike DeBate from Locked On Patriots is going to be on the program to talk about Cam Newton's debut. We've got a ton to get to on the show today. Before we get there, I want to talk a little bit of some big picture ideas. And I think we can't take too much away from week one. Week one inevitably has outcomes that 6, 10, 12 weeks later look impossible, absolutely ridiculous. Remember last year, the Bengals almost beat the Seahawks. I mean, just think about that for a second. But while we can't take too much away from week one, and I don't think we should overreact to any losses, I don't think we should overreact to any wins. What we saw, though, in week one was a group of teams who we thought were going to be contenders this year confirm those suspicions. First, on Thursday, the Chiefs come out and they look as unstoppable as they did last year, as unstoppable really as they did 2 years ago when Patrick Mahomes was the no doubt MVP of the league. And even though, you know, he didn't throw 30 touchdown passes in the game, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire was one of the stars of that game, they beat the Texans 34-20. In the early games, the Packers, there were plenty of questions about whether the Packers were going to be able to come through with another season like last year, a 13-3 year that seemed extremely fluky. Were they going to come back to the pack? The close game wins and the turnover luck and some of the schedule. Okay, they come out in year two with Matt LaFleur's offense. Aaron Rodgers throws for 364 yards and 4 touchdowns. The Packers hang over 500 yards of offense on the Minnesota Vikings and win 43-34. The Seahawks go to Atlanta and score 38 points. Russell Wilson is cooking. We've been wondering for years if they're just going to let Russ cook. They let Russ cook, and it worked in a major way. The Ravens, they take on the Browns, a team that we're wondering, oh, could this be the year for Cleveland? You know, they have a real coaching staff now. They've got a very talented roster. Could they give the Ravens some trouble? They did last year in an early season game. No, the Ravens come out and stomp the Browns 38-6. In the late games, the Saints, they beat the Buccaneers by double digits, as if to say, hey, remember us. I know we lost in the first round last year, but we're still a really good football team. Now, none of this is to say, oh, hey, look, the 49ers, they lost in week one. They're really banged up. They can't come back and be a factor in the NFC. Of course not. And, you know, that doesn't mean we should ignore the Bills, who beat a banged up Jets team, a not very good Jets team, or the Patriots, who, you know, they took on a Dolphins team that was really bad last year and beat them. Was it particularly impressive? No, but is it interesting because of how the defense played and how Cam Newton played? Yes. So we're not going to overreact to the Jaguars beating the Colts in week one. We're not going to overreact to the Cardinals beating the 49ers in week one. We're not going to overreact to the Chargers not doing much to beat the Bengals, you know, winning 16-13 in a particularly unimpressive fashion. But there are these teams who have opened the season, a season that was truncated by COVID-19, offseason process that was extremely abnormal, that did not afford teams and coaches and players their usual process, and we assume is going to stunt the growth and development of a lot of young players, rookies, first-year coaches. And we saw plenty of those struggles on display on Sunday. Yet here these teams are. These are teams, by the way, with continuity. The Packers, the Seahawks, the Chiefs, the Ravens. They've got coaching continuity. They've got scheme continuity. They've got player continuity. And even though none of them made huge splashy deals in the offseason, I mean, the Ravens add Calais Campbell. The Seahawks add Quentin Dunbar. The Packers add Jordan Love. No, just kidding. There is not a lot of major talent acquisition. I mean, the Saints sign Emmanuel Sanders, and he doesn't really make that big of an impact outside of the touchdown catch. But that could have easily been Tre'Quan Smith, or, you know, if it were Ted Ginn Jr. last year, he could have made that play. I mean, it wasn't like that was unique to Emmanuel Sanders. They are saying, hey, welcome to 2020. We are the team to beat, and you have to deal with us. If you want to win the Super Bowl, you have to deal with us. And maybe it's the teams we thought, maybe it's not. And maybe we'll see an evolution of these teams. Maybe the Bucs in a month, in 6 weeks, look like one of those teams. Maybe the Eagles in 6 weeks look like one of those teams. Maybe the Falcons in 6 weeks look like one of those teams. They didn't in week one. And while that's not proof that they can't, I think we have to take notice of the squads who we thought were going to be good and absolutely said we are good in 2020. Is it a lock that they're going to continue to be that? No. But we have to acknowledge these teams are coming out of the gate hot. They look really good. And for now, they are the teams that have to be reckoned with if you want to win a Super Bowl. How was your food spread for week one? Was it everything you wanted it to be? Did you get what you needed? Or could it have been better? Could you have maybe placed an order to that local restaurant that's your go-to and you just thought, nah, I don't want to deal with the hassle? Well, DoorDash makes it so much easier. They have all the things you could possibly want. You want Chinese, they've got it. You want pizza, they want it. You've got frozen yogurt if you want it. Anything you can think of, DoorDash probably has it. You've counted on restaurants, now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and safely get it delivered to you on your front step, outside your apartment, wherever you are. They will deliver it with contactless delivery from over 300,000 partner restaurants in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia. Many of your favorite restaurants are still open for delivery, so help support them. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. That's $5 off and no delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Today's episode is also brought to you by Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off and blame ourselves, saying something like, oh, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether because excuses are just easier to make. But you may need actual medical help. And with Roman, it's easy to talk about it and get the help that you need from a real healthcare professional who can provide real medication. It's safe, simple, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with a free 2-day shipping option. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Today, if approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of treatments. Without question, the game in week one with the most anticipation, the most hype, was the NFC South tilt between the Saints and the Bucks. The Saints come out with a 34-23 win. A ton to unpack from this game. Tom Brady doesn't look great. Some weirdness with the Saints. Drew Brees, 18 of 30, 160, is not a very Drew Brees line. Joining me, Ross Jackson, host of Locked On Saints, to make sense of some of this. Ross, I think the most important thing that we have to try and parse from this game is the Saints get this 11-point win. Was this more about how good the Saints are, or how underwhelming the Bucs are, maybe how much time it's going to take them? What was your big takeaway here?
Yeah, I think that when you look at this game and just the way that this all, you know, as you mentioned, the weirdness that all sort of unfolded, I think the big thing is the lack of composure on the Tampa Bay side, I think, might have been what it was that ended up helping to separate this game. Yeah. To be completely honest with you, and Coach Payton even said this himself in the post-game presser, that for him, it was not a very good play-calling game. He called it one of his worst, in fact, over his career. But the defense for the Saints played very, very well. But you saw some of the other elements in this game really take over. You saw the face mask penalty on the way in for the Emmanuel Sanders touchdown that eventually turned into this sort of pooch sky punch kick off thing that Thomas Morstead pulled off. And then you had two Bucks that essentially ran into each other. And so it was sort of that lack of composure, lack of discipline that ended up working into the Saints' favor, which just happens when you have a team that's a little bit more consistent from the 2019 year to this year than what you saw from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, whose defense really held together in terms of, you know, returning 10 of 11 starters, but has a lot of turnover at very important positions, all on the offensive side and as well as in the coaching staff.
Well, and this continuity piece is something that we've talked about for months now. I mean, with the protracted offseason and the weird preseason, we thought this was going to be a big thing, especially the first month. When the Bucs and the Saints ultimately match up again, do you think this is a sustainable thing that can happen again? Because you mentioned that there's a lot of like very weird things that happened in this game that don't seem like they're likely to happen again.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Drew Brees come through with only 160 passing yards. He had two touchdowns on top of that, both coming in the red zone. But, you know, 160 passing yards for Drew Brees is well below anything that you're accustomed to seeing from him in this Saints offense. Yeah. But it's only the eighth time that he's had that in his career. Michael Thomas, only three catches for 17 yards. He was only targeted five times. We were talking about how many catches Michael Thomas would have to open up the season, and many people were in the double digits, right, at least in terms of targets, and if not catches themselves. You also saw a couple of other little sort of nuances as well that stood out. Latavius Murray with more carries than Alvin Kamara, 15 carries for 48 yards, and then Alvin Kamara, 12 carries, only 16 yards, 1.3. Alvin Kamara's stat line for most of the day looked pretty pedestrian until the big gadget play with the backwards pass, or the double pass, rather, that came off the backwards pass from Drew Brees to Taysom Hill that ended up gaining around, I think it was 38 yards to Alvin Kamara on that one, which really bolstered his day, although the touchdown, near touchdown at the end, almost bolstered his day as well. So, you know, you had a few of those different things that kind of took place in this game that make you feel like, yeah, the Saints still have a lot to improve moving forward. You saw the way that Tampa Bay played. Tom Brady with two interceptions, one of which being a pick six. Janoris Jenkins now stands alone as the active leader in interceptions returned for a touchdown in NFL history. And so you saw a lot of those different things. You know that Tom Brady and his offense are going to coalesce. They're going to get there. They're going to be more communicative the next time that these two teams kick off in the second half of the season. And you know that Drew Brees, Sean Payton, they're going to improve moving forward as well. So when I look at this game, I don't really come to a full-on long-term conclusion just yet about either one of these teams, as they both have still have a lot to work on. But the Saints and Saints fans should be very excited about what they saw, particularly from their defense this week, and hope that they'll be able to maintain that type of production moving forward.
Do we know that about Tom Brady and this offense? I mean, are we sure about that? I mean, I don't want to take too much away from week one, but this is a guy who's been on a downward trajectory the last few years. He's closer to 45 than he is to 40. And I guess I just have never understood why everyone just assumed he was going to be an MVP candidate this year. He looked, frankly, like the guy I thought he would. The pick six is brutal, but he's also right now tied a record for pick sixes in terms of consecutive games with them. And anytime you're in a consecutive game record streak with Matt Schaub for pick sixes, that's bad.
Yeah, it's really not company it's you want. It's not what you want, right? No, I guess you're right. I mean, I think maybe I just give a little bit of credit over to him based upon his previous success, but you really can't do that, can you? Especially this season where everything is so unique, everything is so different. And again, he's in a brand new and entirely new environment. I know he has some fantastic skill position players out there, but Mike Evans walked away from this game with one catch. Now, we know that he came in hobbled because of the hamstring injury. Now, of course, he also caught that for 2 yards as a touchdown as well in the back of the end zone, got a nice favorable matchup with a linebacker in that situation. But even in moments where, you know, you had Chris Godwin with 79 yards on the day, Scotty Miller with 73 yards on the day, a lot of that came toward the end of this game where the Saints were no longer really focusing on manning up and playing that press man defense that they really wanted to be able to play this year. It was going a little bit back more to sort of umbrella defenses and zone defense to just try to limit the big play as much as possible, but more focused on just bringing this game home. And so you saw a lot of that come into, I guess, what we would call garbage time, or what some would refer to as garbage time, in terms of the major production that we saw from Tom Brady during this game. So I think that it makes sense to maybe expect a little bit of an improvement from Tom Brady and this offense moving forward, but I guess you're right. It's not at all a foregone conclusion.
Russ, I appreciate it, man. There's plenty more of these games. Week one was impossibly fun. This game,
yeah.
I don't know if this game was fun. It was certainly weird and entertaining, but I'm sure we'll be speaking again soon on Locked On NFL. And go listen to Ross, by the way, when he hosts Locked On NFL as well. Ross, I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, man. Always a pleasure to be here with you. Thanks so much for bringing me through.
Joining me now to talk about one of the unlikeliest outcomes of week one, I think that's fair to say, host of Locked On Redskins, Chris Russell, the Washington professional football team. It must be a little weird for you having a show that is not about the mascot of your team right now. But that was not the weirdest thing that happened on Sunday. Washington scores 27 unanswered against the Philadelphia Eagles, comes back to win in a game where Ron Rivera got an IV at halftime. I mean, this is one of the more remarkable stories of the last few years in the NFL, really.
It was indeed, Peter. It's good to be with you. You know, I would say this, you know, you throw everything that this organization and Ron Rivera has been through over the last 6-7 months. And I can tell you, as a member of the media on the everyday beat, it has been just exhausting, especially over the last 3 months. And you see how poorly it was going in the first half until late in the first half when they finally broke through, got an interception off of Carson Wentz. That was Fabian Moreau, corner they drafted a couple of years ago. And then cast it in for an easy touchdown from Dwayne Haskins to Logan Thomas, who was making his Washington debut here. Ironically, his only touchdown last year for Detroit was scored against the former Redskins here at FedEx Field. So the last two games he's played, he's got two touchdowns. But I mean, down 17-0, nothing was going good. Penalty at Palouse on defense. They were getting to Carson Wentz, but again, they were committing stupid penalties, undisciplined penalties, and they finally got away to make it straight. Again, the turnovers certainly helped, but scoring touchdowns off those turnovers, Peter, I think was the real big thing. This team has wasted a lot of opportunities over the years, and that's part of the reason why they've been such a bad team, not scoring touchdowns, scoring field goals, maybe wasting turnovers and getting a three and out. Today, they scored 14 points, their first 14 points directly off of turnovers, and their next three that tied it came off of a turnover on down. So, you know, it was a huge kind of turn of momentum that led to a 10-point Washington win.
Yeah, and you mentioned the struggles that Washington has had. When you're trying to build a team, you allocate resources in certain areas. Washington has allocated tremendous resources to the defensive front, Montez Sweat and Chase Young and Deron Payne, and they showed up. I mean, you're talking about 8 sacks, 10 tackles for loss, 14 quarterback hits. I know that the Philadelphia offensive line was depleted, but this is what you want to see, mm-hmm. right, when it comes to a developing young team?
No doubt. And they put, you know, like you said, a ton of resource in. So none of this, let's start with that. You know, this is the result they should have got for the amount of investment, as you just crumbled. And there's guys that you didn't even mention that are key players. You know, Matt right. Ioannidis, who was a 5th-round pick. Just use that
really
as an example.
Really good, underrated player.
But then when you combine the fact that, you know, Philly's without their planned starting left tackle, a 1st-round pick 2 years ago in Dillard, without their Pro Bowl guard Brandon Brooks all year, he's gone. Then the guy they signed back to fill in for him at right guard switches to left tackle, but he's 38,000 years old. And he's a Hall of Famer, but he's 38,000 years old. And then Lane Johnson, their Pro Bowl right tackle, he's been banged up, so he doesn't play. So a little bit of a surprise there. Then they lose their backup right tackle during the game. And that's all when you combine all that, plus Miles Sanders and Derek Barnett. Look, quite honestly, the Washington defense should have dominated in this game. The only surprise to me, Peter, was that it took them as long as it did to really get a grapple hold, if you will, of this game. I think they got 3 sacks on Carson Wentz on the 2nd Philadelphia series and held them to a field goal after Philadelphia went through him like a hot knife through butter on the 1st series. But the reason why they were able to kind of extend that lead was because of bad penalties on 3rd down that Washington self-inflicted. So once they got a hold of the bad offensive line, the beat-up offensive line, and their talent and their kind of legs underneath them and stopped killing themselves, it was all over for Carson Wentz.
We can't not – I mean, I know this is not something that happened in the game, but the Ron Rivera halftime thing, I mean, Ron Rivera is as respected a coach as we have from the media, from the players, from the fellow coaches. He's battling cancer. The story is he got an IV at halftime. Dwayne Haskins gives this impassioned plea to his team, and they come out and score, you know, 20 points in the second half to ultimately win this game. It doesn't need to be something that leads them to a playoff moment, but for a team so lost in the weeds from a culture standpoint, this could have real galvanizing potential to this team, it seems to me.
No doubt. Absolutely. Moments like that, not only for Ron, he said the IV was pre-planned.
Right.
So it wasn't because, you know, he was feeling awful or anything like that. And he did obviously coach the entire game. The Dwayne Haskins speech was not pre-planned, but he has, you know, Peter, taken a huge, huge, huge step in the leadership department and the communication. I mean, he was, you know, deer in the headlights last year, as many rookies are. But he was really bad, and the coaching staff didn't want him. And some people that are quite honestly still in the organization didn't really want him. And I'm not even sure if Ron Rivera and Scott Turner really liked him when they took this job. He had to prove to him or to them and to his teammates that he was a leader, that he was a guy that could earn their trust, that a guy, you know, listen, his performance was still a little shaky. He's still a little up and down. They still weren't good enough on 3rd down. You know, nothing that makes you go, wow, the touchdown pass was wide open. But it's all about leading, and it's all about turning the corner. And like you said, when you're trying to change a culture, you have to have everybody on board. And when you have stuff and emotional stuff like that, that's a big thing. And I think his teammates very much respect Dwayne Haskins now, just like they do. And obviously they respected Ron Rivera, you know, way before the cancer diagnosis, even more now. So you combine those two things, and then a win like this, you know, where you looked so bad, but then you stuck, you know, you hung in there and you fought, and you persevered, and then you win, and you win your first divisional game since October of 2018. Now you go on the road to a good Arizona team, and there's no guarantees, but you feel a lot more confident than if you would have gotten your doors blown out on Sunday here at FedEx Field.
No question about it, Chris. One of the cooler stories that we can will likely get this offseason, or excuse me, this season. I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely, Peter. Great to be with you.
Before we finish up, let's talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, and they just added a new list of flavors to their already awesome lineup. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, carrot cake, and that's on top of German chocolate, peanut butter, mint brownie, double chocolate, toffee almond, peanut butter brownie. These are baller flavors. It's like a candy bar. It really is, but it is high fiber, high protein, low sugar, low calorie. What more could you be asking for? Right now, free cooler with purchase. That's what you could be asking for. While supplies last, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your next order. That's BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off. One of the big stories of week one heading into the week was how would Cam Newton and the New England Patriots mesh. We saw on Sunday Cam Newton was the runner we are used to seeing in a 21-11 Patriots win. To talk about that win, Mike DeBate from Locked On Patriots joining us now. And Mike, this was the Cam Newton, not quite MVP Cam Newton. I mean, 15 of 19 for 155 is nothing to write home about, but led the Patriots in rushing. This certainly looks different from what you saw last year.
Without question. There's no question about it, Peter. Look, Newton's 75 yards on the ground were the most by a Patriots quarterback since Steve Grogan had done in 1977, wow, rushing for 81 yards. So a breath of fresh air when it comes to the New England Patriots. Definitely a breath of fresh air when it comes to what Patriots fans had expected to see out of Cam Newton. Again, you mentioned maybe not up to the 2015 MVP standard, but he looked awfully good today and he looked healthy. And I think that's the most important thing that Patriots fans enjoyed seeing. Looks like he's having fun and he's adapting well into that offense. And he's still got a little ways to go, which could be a scary proposition in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and the defense was supposed to take a step back. Patrick Chung, Dante Hightower, all of the opt-outs, yet three interceptions for Ryan Fitzpatrick. This defense picks up right where it left off last year, and that's with plenty of new faces. Adrian Phillips leads the team in tackles. Were you surprised this defense played as well as it did, considering the losses that it endured over the offseason?
If I'm being honest, absolutely. And I expected the defense to still be pretty stout, but to see them play at the level they played at today was something that was a pleasant surprise for me. Look, Adrian Phillips is someone that I covered when I covered the Chargers a few years ago, and I knew he was the type of chameleon-type player in that offense that could play all over the field, in that defense that could play all over the field and really be able to give opposing offenses fits. So to see him succeed and lead the team in tackles didn't really surprise me. I knew what he could bring to the table. One thing that did surprise me was the defensive linemen, Lawrence Guy, Adam Butler, Byron Coward leading the way. The young linebackers like Anthony Jennings, Chase Winovich, Jawan Bentley taking on that type of defensive play caller vacated by Dante Hightower, who opted out, really stepped up big today. And the secondary was always pretty solid in the middle. Stephon Gilmore had a couple of difficult pass interference calls. Not his best day, but he still walked away with an interception. J.C. Jackson had one as well. So you look at what this team is doing, and they're building these young players into a formidable defense. And granted, you know, they played a Miami team that was void of Devontae Parker for most of the game, but they did play well, and they played smart football and were in the right place at the right time. So it's a good sign for New England moving forward.
Yeah, J.C. Jackson and Stephon Gilmore. Everyone knows how good Gilmore is, but Jackson is someone who, I think the two of them are as good as any 1-2 duo as we have at the cornerback position. I think all of this leads to a pretty basic question about the Patriots' ceiling this year. If we get this defense all year, and they don't need to be three interceptions every week, but if we get a really good defense and Cam Newton just playing like this, how good can this Patriots team be this year?
if they can build on the performances we've seen today and not have any major regressions, then I think you're looking at a team that could make a pretty deep run into the playoffs. Look, there's no question about it. Baltimore and Kansas City played very well in their opening games. They look as formidable as two teams can possibly look. So it's going to be a difficult battle. It's not going to be the runaway train that New England is used to having when it comes to their pecking order in the AFC. But I think you're seeing a team that is definitely capable of playing with anybody. Cam Newton does provide a little bit of a different dimension than we've seen in this offense in quite some time. They were much better today and looked much more comfortable on third down and on fourth and being able to have that threat of extending plays with their legs. The defense is ultimately what's going to carry this team. And a young defense can suffer some regression. So I am reticent to say that this team is going to just be, you know, the juggernaut that we've been used to seeing on defense, especially last year. But what they showed us today definitely proves that they have the talent and they have the wherewithal to be able to do it. So the ceiling is looking a little bit higher for the New England Patriots than maybe even it did 24 to 48 hours ago.
There you have it, Mike. I appreciate it. We will see coming up in the next few weeks. Obviously, week one, we don't want to overreact. I appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure. Anytime, Peter. Thank you for having me today.
It is so rare that the hype team from the offseason comes through, especially in week one. Yet, we saw the Arizona Cardinals take on the San Francisco 49ers and come out on top, a 24-20 upset win. Joining me now, Alex Clancy, co-host of Locked On Cardinals. Alex, were you surprised to see the Cardinals come out as sharp as they did in this game? It wasn't a perfect game by any means, but still they got DeAndre Hopkins involved in an offseason where continuity was supposed to be so important. A lot of their new pieces really stepped up.
Listen, Peter, the way this game started with Isaiah Simmons completely missing an assignment on Raheem Mostert, who took it to the house for over 50 yards. It was just like, oh no, Vance Joseph is going to get fired. The Cardinals are going to win three games. And what have we done this whole offseason? Bo Brock and myself just spitting out, you know, hot air. And Kyler Murray really, he arrived in the NFL today. And the defense played well. And the Kyler Murray, he's an NFL quarterback now. And you saw flashes last year, but with how he and DeAndre Hopkins, with what you mentioned, the lack of continuity in the offseason, DeAndre Hopkins having 16 targets, 14 receptions, 151 yards, when everybody on the defense knew where the ball was going, that's a right. Special quarterback, and that's a special scheme by Cliff Kingsbury. So it's a lot to take right now, because I don't know if it was more Jimmy Garoppolo being bad or the Cardinals being good, but either way, you'll take a quote-unquote road victory, even though there were no fans in the stands. It's a good day to be an Arizona Cardinals fan and an Arizona Cardinals media member, damn it. We deserve this, too.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. The media is important here. We always think that. It's not just Kyler Murray. I mean, Kyler Murray had plenty of hype too, but this whole team was one of those, I mentioned at the top, one of those hype teams. And to see it come to fruition, it didn't seem fluky. It didn't seem out of the ordinary. Like, you watched them play and you went, yeah, this is who this team can be. How good can the Cardinals be this year?
What we saw, Peter, and you're right, what we saw today was every single offseason acquisition, whether it be through the draft or through free agency, has some sort of impact. Isaiah Simmons was probably last on that list, but you saw some push from Jordan Phillips up the middle. You saw Devon Kennard.
And if Isaiah Simmons is last on the list, you're probably fine.
Yeah, you're doing A-okay. Devon Kennard coming over after being cut from Detroit had the fourth and goal stop tackle that gave the Cardinals the ball back on the half-yard line and kept San Francisco from out of the end zone. They can be, if this is really who they are, and listen, the defense wasn't perfect today. There were some definite lapses in judgment, and it's all, defense is based on instinct and trust. And it's hard to have inherent trust when there's so many new pieces, and it's hard to be instinctual when you don't trust the people around you to do their jobs. So all in all, being really a patchwork defense, because it was the first game that everybody played together, they played over the moon. And this is a situation where if this is what their potential can be from day one, I don't know what their cap is on wins this year. And obviously you take one at a time and you're looking at Washington next week with what they did to Philly with that front seven. So this is a be excited for today, be excited for tomorrow, and then get back to work, because you have Washington coming into town next week, and they are a defensive front that really could put this offensive line in some trouble.
Yeah, that defensive front. I had Chris Russell on the show earlier. It is a really impressive front. Chase Young, Montez Sweat, Matt Ioannidis, all those guys can eat. But look, San Francisco has a formidable front in their own right as well. Seattle was also awesome on Sunday. This is going to be a very good division. The Cardinals, though, for the next, about a month and a half, they can really make some hay here. They could be 4-2, 5-1. You know, they could be leading this division when the leaves really start to change color.
Yeah, I mean, it is take it one game at a time.
I don't want to set you up for failure, Alex.
No,
I know.
No,
I mean, I don't want
no,
to get
no.
your hopes up just to set you down. But I just, you know, this is exciting times.
Kelsey, I'm not taking the bait, okay? Right? It's exciting time. The media members deserve this. I guess the fans deserve it too. But when you look at the games ahead, as you mentioned, Washington, Detroit at home, when you are the best team on the field, as the Cardinals were today, you cannot lose those games. And as long as that's the case, as long as the mental errors don't pile up, Zane Gonzalez missed two long field goals today. Kyler Murray had a tip pass get intercepted, and they were able to avert the crisis. It could be a very exciting time in Arizona, and this is a far cry from what could have been the worst output, at least offensively, in the last decade that we withstood in 2018, when the Cardinals put up less points per game than the 0-16 2008 Detroit Lions did. So it's a good day to be an Arizona Cardinals fan, Arizona Cardinals media member, Arizona Cardinal, if you're an employee of the team. Yeah, it's a good day.
Alex, this was great. I don't mean to give you any false hope. So we'll talk in a month, and we'll see where they are. I'm really excited. It's hard to not be excited about where this team at least could go. Whether or not they'll get there, of course, is a question. Alex, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Peter. Appreciate it.
All right. Remember, we are daily. So we're going to be here every day, 5 days a week. This is your new Monday routine. Subscribe to the podcast at Locked On NFL. Follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. Follow the group of Locked On NFL podcasts at Locked On NFL Pods. The guys are going to be back tomorrow. Luke Braun, Ross Jackson, they're going to be in the house on Tuesday, breaking down the Monday night games. We got two of them. So a lot to get to there. Make sure you are getting all of your NFL fixes, not just your local teams, but the big stories that you want every single day. That's what we deliver by being a daily podcast, to make sure we always have the most up-to-date info and the best daily analysis you can find. So stick with us every Monday, of course, and the rest of the week to make sure you're staying Locked On NFL.